Here's a great little quote. What is all-encompassing can have no opposite. What we really are is complete, perfect oneness with the all, the Creator. Whatever, again, it's that ineffable word that can't really put words on, but we try. We're a single, infinite, immortal being. We're changeless, timeless, spaceless, and all-inclusive. We're transpersonal, transcendent. We're totally non-dualistic. We're beyond dreams, and again, ineffable. And I like this little quote, the little joke. And I'm borrowing these also from Gary Renard, as well as a few other things. The Zen master goes up to the hot dog vendor and says, "Make me one with everything." I like that one. So according to this body of understanding, the belief in separation is really one of two thought systems, and it's probably the most popular hallucination that we've all bought into from day one. Spank on the butt, here we are. Okay, you're in a body, you know, this is it. That kind of thinking. And then there's the other thoughts that we occasionally get epiphanies and glimpses of that return us to the all-encompassing oneness. And I think that feeling really is pervasive here. I mean, when I feel the energy of this group and the kind of resonance, the camaraderie and the mellowness of the people here, and it's just wonderful. It's like, yeah, there's a lot of that that's going on here. I like this quote from Goethe. We can never see directly what is true, i.e. identical with what is divine. We only look at its reflection. So I'm going to use a really kludgy shorthand, green for go, red for stop. There's a concept involved with this that says truth increases by sharing, but falsity decreases the ease by sharing. You know, it's kind of the, and on a physical level, if you give somebody a physical thing, then you have less of it, that kind of thinking. But in terms of awareness, when you give awareness away, you got more of it. And so does the other person who's resonating with that. So we're talking about resonance here. And then here's another favorite quote. This is one of Murphy's sub-laws that fits perfectly with this dualistic thinking. There are two types of people in the world, those who divide people into two types and those who don't. I've always loved that little Zen koan there. That's why it's a Zen koan. Like, if you try to take it literally, it just blows your mind kind of thing. Anyway, so there's two ways to interpret anything. There's the wholeness, which is really within the reflection of that all-encompassing oneness, there's still a duality, or it appears to be. So within that, though, we can work toward that awareness of kindness and compassion, the sanity, the equality of all beings, clarity we gain by sharing, the sense of harmlessness, serenity, peace, joy, truth, freedom, as contrasted with separation, fear, insanity, the specialness, like something's more special than something else, or someone more special than something else, someone else, delusion, the gaining by splitting, attack, conflict, anger, boredom, falsity, illusion, slavery, bondage, all that kind of stuff. And here's a few more words that just kind of fit. Those general qualities that have to do with resonance with truth and resonance with illusion. I have a lot to cover, so I'm not going to read every single slide. So fasten your seatbelts. So hands down, the most popular thought system in the so-called universe is separation. We believe that there's a duality, and so that pervades so much of our waking thinking, typically. And yet we surround ourselves with kindred souls like this, and we start loosening up our grip on that kind of stuff. So that's a lot of the purpose of this. So we perceive ourselves as separate individuals, egos, personalities, bodies, our story, our dramas, you know, all that kind of stuff, and our perceptions. And ultimately, that's the cause of all of what we call dis-ease. So the sequel to the Zen story of the hot dog vendor is he comes back to the Zen master after the Zen master overpays him, and he says, change comes from within. So the idea of anything with an object or a subject is intrinsically dualistic. The idea of consciousness as contrasted with awareness, because we can be aware of oneness as a feeling, that kind of like what we were just doing with David's meditation there, when we were tapping into that ineffable serenity, that feeling of peace that defies description and even understanding, but we can be aware of it. But once we have a consciousness about things, then there's an object and a subject, like I had this awareness, or I think of that, or you, or whatever, and it's the you-they kind of thing. And there's nothing wrong with duality, it's just that ultimately the most effective healing, it would seem, comes from resonating with that place of unity. Modern physics tells us that consciousness cannot be isolated from matter and energy or space and time. So the metaphor I like to use is that we're asleep in a dream of separation, and this is very much from the language of A Course in Miracles. And it's like we're the ocean, and we're dreaming that we're being this little prodigal droplet. And we think that droplet is us. We could use that as a metaphor for our body, or even our whole universe as we conceive of it, because we can think of a galaxy, like we've been talking about this weekend, of, you know, what's the resonant frequency of a galaxy, and even that is a speck in the universe as we think of it. So if we had a pair of magic binoculars that we could turn backwards that got the scale right, we would see galaxies as the next biggest thing to the whole, and then we'd finally zoom down to where our little physical selves, not our true spiritual selves, but our physical selves, would be just this little incredibly infinitesimal droplet. But that's where we spend most of our attention and most of our waking daily lives. Not that that has to be, but that's the whole idea, is that the mindfulness that eases gently out of that addiction to thinking that this is it. This is all there is, that kind of thinking. So the idea of separate bodies and things are projection from our unconscious minds. And we've made up, in a sense, this hoax. I mean, it's not that there's anything wrong with it. I mean, it's just neutral, really, ultimately. And it seems real. So without a consciousness of separation, this whole holodeck disappears. And I think we've all had, to some degree, various kinds of mystical experiences where that happens to an extent. I'm just like when you meditate. What happens when you lose the identification with the body as the predominant paradigm? Kind of winks out, doesn't it? That feeling of oneness becomes more pervasive. So even our finite mind exists on dimensions that we're not usually alert to. And then we have dreams, altered states of consciousness, and what we call psychic phenomena are really just examples of interconnectedness and what we might think of as cracks in the big hologram. Things peering around the edges like that woodcut shows. Another phrase that I like is that there's two great illusions, man and the universe, you know, or humans and the universe, to bring it a little more up to date. That was something I heard years ago, and I thought, well, that's kind of true. And there's so many neat metaphors in the media that can remind us. There's one classic original Star Trek episode, the amusement park. Anybody see that one? Where they've got the biplanes and the damsel in distress and everything that they think about when they land on this planet. This little antenna picks up the thoughts and fabricates it from under the planet, and within a few seconds, there it is roaming around. Well, that's, you know, talk about the law of attraction and cause and effect. But in a sense, that's kind of how we're creating this reality. And it can be a happy dream or a nightmare or anywhere in between. So another good metaphor would be the Truman Show, the Matrix series, although maybe we're not quite as anchored into these crazy-looking, you know, blobs of things that the Matrix shows. And then the Wizard of Oz, you know, we're always home. We just forgot that we were home. And a lot of other virtual reality films. All that what we would consider, you know, negative emotions really require the premise of separation. So the best way to keep that illusion intact is to deny our complicity that we made it up. And if we can, you know, say, oh, they did it, you know, kind of thing. So really our relationship with what we think of as other people, and this is where we're going to talk about quantum forgiveness and how that works, and other things, is really the fast track to undoing the illusion. And that really represents the sort of the prodigal return to our true nature as unlimited and peaceful when we tune into that quality, or waking up from the dream. The Eastern thought of seeing the universe as illusion is really a key component of this thought system, if you will. It's also essential to healing and forgiveness and enlightenment, and that is forgiveness. And there's two kinds of forgiveness. One is what you could call Newtonian or the old school, where there's things out there, and then we, you know, bounce around like billiard balls, you know, kind of thing, and just sort of like at the whim of, you know, the physical laws and so forth. And then there's this quantum where there is this entanglement, quantum cream rinse to wash out the entanglement, that maybe not. Anyway. But there's good entanglement, of course, too. That's what we're trying to go for, is that the entanglement that reminds us that we're all one. And that basically is where we tune into that quantum level of unity that is our natural state. And once you have that sense of unity, the idea of blame and judgment and criticism is like, wait a minute, what am I doing? You know, take out foot, aim and fire. You know, it's like, why shoot yourself in the foot? You know, because that's really what lack of forgiveness really ultimately results in. So again, the concept that really struck me in the Gary Renard stuff, and then now going back through and reading the Course in Miracles text again and the workbook, the idea that the Newtonian variety is that there's separate objects. There's a we and a they, and they did something, you know, to us kind of thing, or whatever, or didn't for us or whatever. But then that presupposes the notion of other, which in the quantum world ain't no such animal. So the quantum paradigm then goes into the idea that there's nothing out there and there's no body to forgive. And it also means that there's no events. If space and time collapse to zero, then there's no events to forgive, ultimately. Now, we're obviously, it's not talking about denial. It's not saying that, no, nothing's happening. But it's saying if we put ourselves more and more in the frame of mind where we can let go of the veracity or the unshakableness of the notion that space and time is it, and particularly our little, tiny little window in it, then that frees us up to make those quantum jumps to where when we practice that type of forgiveness, we're out of the negative entanglement, if you will. If we forgive ourselves for what we made up, it's what it really boils down to, then we're letting go of the illusion. So if we're upset with someone else, again, quotes around the else and the someone else, we're really, in a sense, according to modern physics, we're having a distorted perception, and it's keeping us stuck in the mirage. So that's why the thought system that the forgiveness comes from, whether it's a blame kind of thing and think, well, I'm just going to deny that that happened kind of thing, it's not that about that at all. It's about saying there really is no other, there's no events, and it's all truly here and now. And from that perspective, there's nothing to forgive. The egoic mind really doesn't like being deprived of its scapegoats. This is where it's kind of interesting to watch the habitual patterns of mind and just say, well, okay, well, that's interesting. And it's always difficult for the egoic mind to embrace that, because that's the part of us that believes that we're stuck in a little tiny sliver of space-time. Whereas our true nature, if it's really unlimited, if we're, as Richard Bach says, a perfect unwritten number everywhere across space and time, kind of like what David was saying just this last presentation, that we're all frequencies, you know, different ways of saying the same thing perhaps, then that unlimited nature really is basically perfectly at ease in letting go of the scapegoats and saying, oh yeah, okay, I confess up to that, because and ultimately it doesn't matter. So if we're free of the need to defend or justify or blame or criticize or whatever, then that gives us the perspective beyond our finite perceptions to make that evaluation that frees us. The cool thing about that kind of quantum forgiveness is it immediately benefits the forgiver. Now, the forgivee, implying a duality, which is kind of hard to, you know, get around that in terms of our language of when we think of other people or other events or whatever it happens to be, it might benefit the forgivee, but that's none of your business. Like that quote I really like that says, you know, what you think of me is none of my business. I always like that one. So there may be benefits of which you're not even aware, the ripple effects on other dimensions of time when we let go of our attachment to outcomes and to you know, the negative attachments and that sort of thing. So you don't really have to give up anything material if it's all an illusion, right? So the idea is not to deny the illusion, but to just say, wait a minute, is that where I want to put my awareness? Is that where I want to put my emphasis? The cool thing about it is really simple. It's a very simple philosophy. It's not necessarily easy, but it's simple. And the idea is that if someone is expressing unconditional acceptance that is in your field of awareness, the appropriate and effective response is, you guessed it, unconditional acceptance. If someone is not expressing unconditional acceptance, or like Jerry Jampolsky would say, love or fear, still, the appropriate and effective response is also unconditional acceptance. The egoic separate mind is really only temporary. So it, basically, quantum forgiveness is a way to dispel that. And it's obviously a systematic process that happens with habitual practice. And that's what we're all here to do, to help remind each other. And I'm going to talk about how certain symbols can be reminders of that. And there's so many that we can use. With that thought system, anything can be a reminder. I'm going to skip through these pretty fast because I've got probably 5 hours of stuff to cover and an hour and 15 minutes, so you'll forgive me, please, if I kind of zip through some of these, but hopefully I'll cover the essence of the ideas. The attitude of non-attachment to outcomes, I think, is a huge one, because that non-attachment to outcomes really covers a lot of ground, because that essentially allows us to remember that we're cause rather than effect. And when we're cause, then the outcome is like, oh, well, it'll take care of itself. And we don't have to be attached to identification with it. Quantum forgiveness is not only justified, but living in cause rather than effect is really where the real freedom lies. Because obviously, if you're bound by effects and you're at the whim of every little circumstance that comes along, then we're just kind of buffeted about like a ship without a rudder or sails down or whatever. And whereas if we understand that we are the cause and that we can take charge of how we choose to feel moment to moment, then we have that freedom. I like the quote there from John Wheeler, there's no out there out there. So here's an acronym. Again, this is borrowed from Gary Renard with thanks to him, called JFO, Just Another Forgiveness Opportunity. So moment by moment, again, this is where the rubber meets the road. Obviously, it's a great theory until you practice it. But the idea is anytime something ruffles your feathers or you find from severe to minor irritation, you know, or annoyance or whatever. If modern physics is right, and there's no out there, okay, then A, there's nobody to forgive, and B, there's nothing happening. And in truth, in the truth of the, you know, the hologram that we're making up moment to moment, if that concept is valid, then every moment becomes an opportunity for forgiveness. There's something that's bugging you. You can imagine a little hologram over the other hologram that we call our life appearing that says JFO, just another forgiveness opportunity. Say you might have a favorite pet peeve corporation or set of corporations. Perfect example. Just pick your favorites here. I just threw a bunch up on there. Just another forgiveness opportunity, right? Okay. Maybe some religious figures, you know, or just religions in general. It's just another forgiveness opportunity. How about some political figures? Nobody, I'm sure, has any issues with any political figures. It's just another forgiveness opportunity. As we were talking about earlier, you know, what's wrong with unconditional love and forgiveness and impeachment? You know, they could be mutually inclusive, right? Why not? Yeah. The idea is, again, to shift our awareness to the happy dream rather than the nightmare. And then they're both holograms, and they're both dreams, as Eastern mysticism tries to remind us. But why not gradually move toward the happy dream, where the crossing over into that state of oneness is so much easier? Again, how about world problem images? You know, those are just another forgiveness opportunity. And not that they aren't challenging at times. You know, all these things. Your home situation. There's our house when it was being built a few years ago. Just another forgiveness opportunity, right? All the things that come up around your household, your favorite technology issues, computer won't boot, you know, all those kind of things, whatever, you know, it's like stuff that we deal with every day, just another forgiveness opportunity. I just pulled some family pictures off the web. Your favorite family members, in-laws or outlaws here, you know, whatever applies. How about yourself? You know, your own little drama of, oh, I'm this, these are my stories, this is my stuff, you know, it's like, well, why not forgive ourselves for having believed various things about ourselves?